anyone can tell you the news.
Look, Diamond is hooked.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up, and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia, and the left is embracing this type of behavior.
We welcome Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off. In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama, and that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues that really matter.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to the Michael Hart Show.
September 2019, and you're listening to the Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network. This broadcast brought to you by the Unknown America Project, myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth. You can find out more by going to theunknownamerica.com, theunknownamerica.com. Also, our friends over at Liberty One Tech for all your cyber needs, your tech support. Just go over to Liberty, then put in the number one, libertyonetech.com, landreport.com. For those of you that are lovers of land, particularly big, wide open spaces, and of course, here locally, Alabama Water Management, if you've got a drainage or foundation issue, you can check them out over at alah20.com. This is the Acrimony in America post 9/11 style edition of the program. His name is Nicholas Haros. He was actually a speaker on yesterday's commemoration for the 9/11 attacks. He wants Representative Ilhan Omar and the squad to know exactly who those, some people are that, perpetrated the something that took the life of his mother and nearly 3,000 other people 18 years ago yesterday. The New Jersey resident who lost his mother in the attacks ripped Congresswoman Omar yesterday during a reading of victims' names at Ground Zero. After Omar's infamous remarks earlier in the year, which he described the most horrific attack ever to occur on the American homeland, as saying, some people simply did something. So just a little bit of a taste of that.
Fear was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
But this was not the only attention-grabbing commemoration of the day. These stories, your calls, this day in history, and Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com joins us in about 45 minutes to 1 hour from now. An awful lot to cover, and as well as typically thought would occur, so many people had interesting observations and, frankly, ways to exploit the day as well. It's interesting to note that so many of the people in America, particularly the younger voters in America today, either were just being born or were toddlers at this particular date and time and simply do not recall the horror of the day and the amazing concerns and suspicions in the days and weeks that followed. The inconveniences, the fear of looming war, the attacks in the Middle East that followed on the immediate aftermath of that event on the 11th day of 9 in 2001. So we're going to get a little bit deeper into this today, take a look at some of the outrage. Many people do not recall also, obviously, that on the 12th day in September of 2001, how the country came together and we felt about as patriotic as we had in decades and decades leading up to the event. So many young people today simply do not grasp the intensity of the situation, and Ilhan Omar, among others, certainly do not appreciate the extent of, the fear and the loathing and the distrust that was gripping much of the country, internationally speaking. But without any further ado, it was on this day in history, in 1953, that U.S. Senator and future President John Fitzgerald Kennedy marries Jacqueline Bouvier at St. Mary's Church in Newport, Rhode Island. Also on this particular day, in 1959, the Soviet Union launches a large rocket, the Luknik 2, at the moon. Interestingly enough, it was 3 years later that Jack Kennedy, this would have been in 1962, delivers his "We Choose to Go to the Moon" speech at Rice University.
For we meet in an hour of change and challenge, in a decade of hope and fear, in an age of both knowledge and ignorance. The greater our knowledge increases, the greater our ignorance unfolds. Despite the striking fact that most of the scientists that the world has ever known are alive and working today, the vast stretches of the unknown and the unanswered and the unfinished still far outstrip our collective comprehension. There is no strife, no prejudice, no national conflict in outer space as yet. Its hazards are hostile to us all. Its conquest deserves the best of all mankind, and its opportunity for peaceful cooperation may never come again. But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Now, interestingly enough, the "We Will Go to the Moon" speech is considered to be one of Kennedy's absolute most motivated speeches that he has given, and he gave quite a few of them. Interestingly enough, in 1992, to the day, September 12, 1992, NASA launches the space shuttle on STS-47, which marked the 50th shuttle mission. On board are Mae Carroll Jemison, the first African-American woman in space, Marumaru Mahai, the first Japanese citizen to fly in U.S. space, and Mark Lee and Jan Davis, the first married couple in space. And that was exactly 50 years to the day. This is one of the reasons that this program and the Unknown America Project exists, because there are so many people in this country that simply do not realize that so much of the past guides so much of the present and certainly the future. It's interesting that on the 12th day of September, all the way back in 1962, that Kennedy in the moon speech speaks to equality, but he also, and you know, 50 years later, here we have the first African-American woman in space, but he also speaks to the common goal of the United States, regardless of our party. Did you hear the part, and I'll play it again here in just a moment, where he's talking about how the moon is hostile to us all. Now, bear in mind that this is the 12th day of September. Obviously, 9/11 had not occurred, but think about how unified we were on the day after 9/11 in 2001, because we had a hostile enemy. We had a unifying enemy, and we didn't even know who it was at this point in time. 50 years prior, and at least in the case of today, you know, we're talking about how divided we are in this country. But I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I do want you to pick up on that, because it's interesting to note that in 1962, Kennedy, although unintentionally, is speaking about so many of the plagues that we are dealing with to this very day. And it's also interesting, it's noteworthy that he is speaking about having this common goal that's so unbelievably challenging that it should unite us as a nation. And it did. And this is also, you know, not uncommon to other governments as well, that peoples tend to be more unified when there is a common threat. And there's a very interesting book out there called, it's either Tribal or The Tribe or something like that. But it talks about how this guy, he's a former Marine, former military, interviewed all these people over the years and talking about how tribal communities are in history have always thrived so much more. And that several people that he had conversations with in interviews, that people during, you know, times at World War I, World War II, were actually happier than they have been in times of peace. And I'm paraphrasing the message of the book, but the point was, is that in times of national strife, where it affects all of us collectively, the nation seems to, it unifies, it comes together, and there's this broad-based sense of community that currently in today's political climate, we are simply not experiencing. And that in fact, the unifying enemy today is actually us. It's within, it's domestic, and it's not external to the United States of America. Now, the moon obviously was not a threat, but the challenge certainly was just that, a challenge that had was ripe with failure and fear and unknown, and it brought the nation together in a lot of senses. Let me run through this just one more time. I won't play the whole thing, but I wanted to see if you can pick up on what Kennedy is speaking about. And we weren't going to the moon to unify the country, but what he's trying to make the point is that when we set our sights and our goals higher, you know, the old expression, make no small plans because they have no power to stir men's blood. And Kennedy is speaking to that. He is speaking to when we set our goals loftier than we can ever imagine, that we unify as a nation and we get beyond the political pettiness that seems to create the acrimony that we saw yesterday on the 9/11 commemoration. Listen to this one more time and see if you can hear what I'm hearing.
Well, we meet in an hour of change and challenge. In a decade of hope and fear, in an age of both knowledge and ignorance. The greater our knowledge increases, the greater our ignorance unfolds.
Now stop right there for just a minute. The greater our knowledge increases, the greater our ignorance unfolds. Does that not sound exactly like what's going on in this country today? It's absolutely imperative that we as a country, as a community, as a society, realize that many of the things that we're going through in this nation, we've had to deal with in the past. And there's too many young people that have not only forgotten or never knew about the horror of 9/11 2001, and let's also not forget, you know, the commemoration of Benghazi while I'm thinking about it. But the fact that they never knew, and they never even knew to know, they never even knew to look and to reflect and to look back. There's a lot of people out, you know, in the world today that they're 20, 25, 30 years old. They don't understand why our TVs were populated with documentaries and infomentaries yesterday dealing with the 9/11 attacks and the horror of that day. But let's go again back to 1962, do it one more time, and then we're going to blow past this day in history. But I do think it's very important to remember that we have forgotten. And there's a song, Have You Forgotten? Well, the answer is yes, we have. Maybe we haven't forgotten September 11, 2001, but we've certainly forgotten 1962. We've certainly forgotten so many of the struggles of the 1970s and even the 80s, for that matter. Hell, you got Joe Biden out there screaming that JFK and Martin Luther King were assassinated in the 70s. This is a big problem politically speaking, but I want to play this a little bit more this one more time. I want you to listen to him talk about the struggles the nation faced at that time, and then let's bring them forward, because we can only understand the news of the day by breaking it down, what? Through the prism of the past.
Well, we meet in an hour of change and challenge, in a decade of hope and fear, in an age of both knowledge and ignorance. The greater our knowledge increases, the greater our ignorance unfolds. Despite the striking fact that most of the scientists that the world has ever known are alive and working today, the vast stretches of the unknown and the unanswered and the unfinished still far outstrip our collective comprehension. There is no strife, no prejudice, no national conflict in outer space as yet.
No prejudice, no conflict in space. The very things that we're dealing with in this nation today, Kennedy felt as though the unifying goal of sending men to the moon would help to assuage many of the ills that this country was dealing with in 1962. This is unbelievably important for our young people to know, and it's unbelievably important for their parents to remember. But instead of having motivated speeches from the Democrat Party, and I perhaps will do this in a future edition of this program, what has happened to the Democrat Party in this country today? Because that was 1962. This is 2019.
And the other thing we should do is we should challenge these students. We should challenge students in these schools to have advanced placement programs in these schools. We have this notion that somehow if you're poor, you cannot do it. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
Well, we meet in an hour of change and challenge, in a decade of hope and fear, in an age of both knowledge and ignorance.
Get it? That's a big part of what is wrong in this nation today, is the simple fact that we have lost our way intellectually, our knowledge has grown, but our ignorance unfolds. And we see this play itself out every single day on social media, on regular media, on internet media, in the speeches, in the comments. The acrimony is palpable. Interestingly enough, in the 1960s, it was also palpable, but it was also recognized and it was manageable. We seem to have no desire or sense of that in this nation today. Not only has the if it feels good, do it culture taken hold, but we have lost all common sense and sensibility. There is obviously checks and balances between the three branches of government, but there used to be checks and balances between the powers of the parties. We no longer have that in check either. It's become a schoolyard tantrum where social media and tweeting and backbiting, accusations, and again, acrimony rule the day. There's no sense of common purpose. There's no desire for truth versus facts. It's all grandstanding and showmanship. Kennedy was not wildly popular, at least in the early days. He has been canonized by both parties in the years after his death. Frankly, he should have been canonized during his lifetime. I am a lifetime Republican conservative, although I would really like to call myself more of an independent conservative because I do have issues with the Republican Party. But I am a very big fan of Jack Kennedy because he spoke to, as Abraham Lincoln would coin the phrase, the better angels of our nature, and understanding the desire for community in a nationalistic sense. We don't have that kind of leadership today. We've got slogans and tweets, campaign posters, and memes. We get our news from YouTube, whatever it is, Yahoo, Snapchat, Instagram. There are people out there that just go through their Instagram feeds and simply take the headlines and then get on with their day without understanding the stories or the reasons behind the headlines. How many people do you think there are in this country, besides you listening to this broadcast, that know that on this date in 1962, a president of the United States that considered himself nonpartisan gave one of the most stirring and motivational speeches for the future this country has ever seen? And lo, how far the Democrat Party has fallen. And lo, how many people serving in office today have no clue about the past, no desire for the recollection and no sense of patriotism that was shared by the Democrats and the Republicans. I'm not suggesting that they always got along, because that would not be the case. But there was a commonality of outcome that we simply do not share in this nation today. Instead, we get acrimony and vitriol that is framed in the words such as this.
Fear was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
Now, CARE, of course, being the Council on American Relations, okay? American and Islamic Relations. CARE was formed as a group to help Muslims to maintain their rights, but also as somewhat of a front, because they knew that there would be much backlash in the United States against the Muslim community, which there was, and at the time, deservedly so, at least in terms of suspicion. I would never advocate for violence, but I would advocate for concern and suspicion. Yesterday, this Nicholas Harrows Jr. wants Ilhan Omar and the squad to know exactly who some people are that perpetrated something that took the life of his mother. Now, if my math is correct, AOC, for example, would have been 12, 13 years old at the time of the attacks. And if your home was anything like my home, despite the ubiquitous nature of the reporting, many moms and dads simply shielded their young kids from any exposure to the horrors. Those of you that don't recall, do not recall, planes weren't flying. Some businesses were not opening. Personally, although I had owned rifles up to this point in time, I did not own a handgun. I would get one some months later, but I remember driving around in my pickup truck with my shotgun loaded, having no idea if the next curve I was going to come around, I would run into yet another event. Everybody was scared. My family is from New York. My brother lived there at the time. My mother did as well. Her husband, a former New York cop, was actually working for a company called the Pinkerton Agency, the detective agency. He was supposed to be in the South Tower that day. Luckily, he was not. My brother, in a Facebook post just yesterday, and it's one that he's repeated year in and year out, references what he remembers the most, the smell. Last evening, the wife asked me about this particular Facebook post and the smell, and what was he referring to. I made it clear that, amongst other things, it would have been burning flesh. For years and years and years, years and years, every time a plane flew over New York, which was obviously multiple times a day, people cringed. My mother, who at this point in time owned a vacation home in New Hampshire, sold her business in New York, and alongside her husband, relocated permanently to that vacation home because of all of the concern from what was going on in this country and whether or not this was our new normal. Many people in America convinced that we were now the new Israel. With the daily air siren raids, the missiles flying overhead, and no knowledge whatsoever if we would be invaded on the ground. At this point in time, I was also a seminar speaker. I do still speak. I love to speak. I love to talk about American history, the past, and the media. If you know any organization that would love to learn the truth of the history of this country, or how the media really operates, hit me up. You know where to find me. I had a thriving, bustling career. Traveled all over the United States, Canada, the islands, teaching business owners how to get free publicity for their company, a speech I still deliver. That business all but dried up. No one was flying. Events were canceling. Nobody knew what the outcome was going to be. It essentially destroyed me economically. The speaking and seminar industry has since made a comeback. I was not a part of that comeback because I moved into talk radio, because at the end of the attacks, the day after, I began listening to a local talk radio host, but he was syndicated locally, G. Gordon Liddy. Yep, that G. Gordon Liddy. The 9/11 attacks gave birth to my radio career. Not that it was the start of my radio broadcasting, but rather my interest in talk radio, which was non-existent on 9/11. For years and years and years, you can go to New York and see the streets still barricaded. The big orange cones redirecting traffic away from certain streets. It was a scar that was left on that city, as well as Pennsylvania and the Pentagon. Some years later, I was chaperoned a trip to Washington, D.C. with my youngest daughter. We went to the Pentagon and saw the memorial of the benches that are right outside where one of the planes struck, each placed at the trajectory of the plane and in relation to the other people in the Pentagon and where they died. There was one person, a major from Birmingham, who I apologize, his name slips my mind, but my daughter and I sought out his bench. It took about 45 minutes, and then I sat there for the next hour and explained to her what had occurred. My explanation to her sounded nothing like.
FAIR was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us.
Yeah, it wasn't a some people did something kind of conversation. But instead, today, we have a whole population of Americans that were never taught about the events of that day, how it impacted this nation. So many people reference the 12th day of September in 2001 as a day of hyper-patriotism. Democrats, Republicans, and the militant arm of the Salvation Army on the front steps of the Capitol building singing songs about America. That did not last very long, but this did birth the new era of acrimony in politics in America. The conspiracies came, the blame was leveled, certain ethnic groups were implicated, and the conversation continues to this day. However, as Jack Kennedy pointed out in 1962, as our knowledge grows, our ignorance unfolds, and it continues to do so to this very day. And this, ladies and gentlemen, despite airplanes flying into buildings 18 years ago yesterday, the physical threat to America is not the one that we should be concerned with. It is the intellectual threat perpetrated by a political process on both sides in some cases that stains the narrative and prevents us as a collective and a society and culture of moving forward like Jack Kennedy called on us to do in 1962. Because today it's no longer about common good and achievement. It's about power, the lust for money, and the desire to manage a community of Americans that far too often, because of their ignorance and apathy, are lost to the truth and reality of this nation because it's too easy to ignore it and too easy to fall victim to the empty promises of a political structure that has no desire for sustenance, achievement, and gain unless it affects them directly, personally, and for their own benefit. Heart of America and the Michael Hart Show is brought to you in part by the Unknown America Project. Unknown America, myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth, explores many of the falsehoods and fallacies and revisions in American history that impact the beliefs and the thoughts of many people in this country today. So if you'd like to learn some of the most enduring myths that have been perpetrated on the American public for the last 100 plus years in this country, go check out the book at heartofamerica.net. That's heartofamerica.net. And pick up a copy of Unknown America. It comes out to you absolutely no shipping. It'll be autographed, and we'll even send you a copy of the United States Constitution is our way of saying thanks. So support the Unknown America Project by simply going to theunknownamerica.com, and thank you for your support.
Don't you hate it when your computer is running slow? Did you know that could be a sign of viruses, spyware, or Trojan horses giving hackers access to your private data? Do not let your identity be stolen. Do not let your private documents be made public. Do not let a hacker hold your family photos hostage. Do let the industry-leading security experts at Liberty One Tech ensure that your computer and network are safe. Liberty One Tech will also help secure your online accounts to keep hackers out and make sure you never lose access. It's all free when you join the Talk Text Plus service. With Talk Text Plus, you have unlimited VIP access to expert technology help 7 days a week so that you can always make the right click. Sign up today and get the free security checkup at libertyonetech.com. That's Liberty, the number one, tech.com.
The Land Report, the magazine for the American landowner, is a proud supporter of the Michael Hart Show. Currently, they're offering an exclusive subscription price for listeners of the Michael Hart Show. So click on the subscribe button on landreport.com and enter the code HARTSHOW at checkout and receive a one-year discount on America's number one land magazine. You'll get a full year of the Land Report, which normally goes for $59, for only $15. That's a 75% savings off the cover price. Again, that's promo code HARTSHOW at checkout of thelandreport.com, and make sure to check out The Land Report on Facebook if you love land.
And Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Listening to the Michael Hart Show right here in the Heart of America, Doc Radio Network. Take a couple calls here in just a moment. Some of these stories that we are following on our acrimony edition of the Michael Hart Show. Jeb Bush shames irate passengers complaining about airport security on 9/11. Obviously, a whole group of people completely removed from the reality of the severity of the day. Bush expressed disbelief Wednesday after witnessing two incidents of travelers getting angry about security measures at an airport. He went on to say, I'm flying today and have seen two incidences where irate passengers are challenging basic security measures. And on September 11th, amazing. I appreciate the patience and professionalism of American Airlines personnel. Of course, since the 9/11 attacks, security at airports across the nation have remained on heightened alert, and a number of additional measures were implemented. Of course, 9/11 also gives us the pain in the ass organization, the Transportation Security Administration. But it's a pain in the ass that I accept gratefully. Not a perfect organization, but certainly one that's understood in its existence. And getting to an airport today is significantly easier than it was in the post 9/11 months. After the September attacks in 2001, I did not fly for another speaking engagement until January the following year, flying out to Las Vegas. I arrive at the airport, and I'm not kidding. Here is a Nigerian sports team. I believe it was a rugby team. All of them carrying duffel bags. Yep, I know that sounds xenophobic as hell. But on the heels of 9/11 at 6 o'clock in the morning, it was a little unnerving. Obviously, nothing happened, and my concerns unfounded. But at least in my mind, my temporary xenophobia understood. If you had a flight at noon, you had better gotten there at 9:30 in the morning. That's no longer the case. Pre-9/11, you could actually walk to the gate where your loved one was going to come off of the plane. Now you wait in baggage claim. So many people in this country, completely clueless as to how life changed after that. The axe that it got us. The TSA and the other Homeland Security. The warning systems, which is, by the way, one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of. Ron White does a brilliant piece on that with his mother. Put on the damn helmet, Mom. Yeah, if you haven't heard it, Google it. But you've got people like Ilhan Omar running her pie hole. Somebody did something. People at the airport bitching because of lines. It's so bad that you've got Whoopi Goldberg, slamming member of Congress, who skipped moments of silence. This chick, all of a sudden, in the last couple of weeks, is starting to look moderate. That's how far the left has gone. She calls out members of Congress who skipped an event honoring the 9/11 terror attacks on Wednesday. Let me tell you how campy I am. Then we'll go to the phones. I'm home yesterday. I'm alone. My office is in my home. And although I do own a contracting company, I do operate out of my home office. I wanted to go downstairs because my office is up in the upper level of my home and watch the commemoration of 9/11. There's a moment of silence, actually a couple of them. Now, I'm alone. The golden doodle's there, but, you know, from a human perspective, I'm alone. Moment of silence in my own home. I stand and remove my hat. And we can't get some members of Congress to actually attend the events. Pelosi and other members of Congress observed a moment of silence earlier in the day to mark the 18th anniversary of the event, but Goldberg was not satisfied with the turnout. Hooray for Whoopi. And I cannot believe I'm saying that. If some old gray-haired white guy in Alabama with no one looking feels the compulsion to stand and remove his hat during a moment of silence, why in the hell can Congress people not do the same? Because they probably do not remember the event, were not affected by the event, or don't give a damn about the event. But this is beyond the terror attacks. This speaks to their dedication, their loyalty, and their sovereignty in terms of this nation. Nation first. Do I have to go back to Jack Kennedy? Not this speech. But ask not what your nation, what your country can do for you. Yeah, it's an upcoming edition of this program. We're changing things up here a little bit, where we're going to get a lot deeper into the history of this country. Because damn it, some of this stuff's going to rub off on somebody. I am so fed up with this 1619 report and all the crap that's being thrown out there that is just completely enough kernels of truth to be palpable and believable. But time and time and time and time again, we file history into the dustbin of the dark recesses of our minds. It was worth me getting on my feet. Apparently, it wasn't worth some of these congressmen getting on theirs. According to Goldberg, not everyone is honoring moments of silence. Apparently, like 26%. Of House members showed up to the moment of silence on the steps of the Capitol building this morning. Before we get to the phones, Goldberg wasn't finished explaining why remembering 9/11 is crucial for Americans. We don't know why they weren't there, but this might not have been the right day to screw around with the optics. I'm just saying. This is a moment that affected everyone in this country, not just New Yorkers. They came for America. They hit us here first, and then they went to other places to take us, to try to take us down. They affected many more people than are just here. This is an American issue. Many people don't realize that Air Force One was in the air for many, many, many hours, zipping back and forth across the country because we did not know if D.C. in terms of the Capitol would be hit. We did learn in subsequent years Air Force One was indeed a target. A surface-to-air missile takes out Air Force One. Can you only imagine? Or perhaps a better way to phrase it is, have you forgotten? Or worse, did you ever really know? Hello, Clark.
Hey, Michael. You doing all right?
Okie doke.
Well, okie doke will get you through. You're past hump day. Looky there. You got one more day to a weekend.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, can we talk about the Democrat primary for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. So I think pretty much we've seen that the DNC has the ability to determine who the nominee will be more so than the primary voters, right?
It would seem.
Yeah. So given that, let's just do one of these thought exercises and think about what the Democrats would like to achieve with their candidate for president this go-round. Obviously, beat Donald Trump and win back the White House would be a wonderful goal for them, but they probably understand that it's not doable. In spite of having total control of mass media and 90% control of federal agencies, if they thought it was possible, I think they would not be talking this yang about impeachment, which they know is damaging overall to them. So let's just figure that they don't figure that whoever their candidate is going to actually win this time around. Then you got to consider the down ballot, because the person at the top of the ticket can increase Democrat voter turnout or suppress Democrat voter turnout. So that's got to be a consideration, right?
Correct.
And then the other thing that I can think of that might be an objective would be to advance normalization of their leftist ideology for future elections. Now, you know, if you're going to think about the down ballot, I got to think Biden is the safe choice. Not because he's going to motivate that many more people to come out, but the moderate Democrats would be more likely to come to the polls if Biden's on the ticket than, say, a strident Bernie or a shrill Elizabeth. But now, if you want to move the ball downfield for leftism, maybe Elizabeth or Bernie's the way to go. I don't know. Have you studied on any of that much?
You know, I have a bit, Clark, and I don't disagree with you because, you know, at the end of the day, most of the moderate Democrats, the older Democrats, can't bring themselves to vote for the extreme leftism. As you are well aware, I have several friends that are Black. And the reason that that is germane to this conversation is and they're mostly my age. In those conversations that I've had with them, I have had more than one tell me that their Democrat parents will not vote at all. And let me say this the right way, because I don't want to confuse people. There is a measure of conservatism and conservative viewpoints in older Democrat voters. And I'm talking about their relationship with their family, their finances, their Lord. You know, there is a sense of patriotism that does exist in the Democrat Party. You just got to get a little further out from D.C. and a little further out from the millennial crowd. I'm talking about, you know, the more mature Democrat voters that have been around for a while. Maybe they're 50, 60, 70 years old. They're not putting up with a bunch of this Bernie AOC BS. So I think that your observation about Biden is astute in that it potentially brings those voters out, and they are a much more dependable voter block than these young snot-nosed kids who are not going to make it to the poll because they just got to the next level of Fortnite and they don't want to disrupt the game.
Well, you know, I think, and I again, you know, you said you wanted to phrase it right. I think a lot of older Democrat voters have been almost willfully ignorant of the movement that their party has taken to the left. And I think that with what we've had in the last 8 to 10 years, it's getting harder and harder for them to push that aside in their minds. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely
okay.
does.
Now, you know, you look at things at the surface, and it would seem like Nancy Pelosi is the only one they got that's a chess player. And smart enough to figure out we don't need to be talking about impeachment. We don't need to be doing this. And the more I look at it, Michael, you know, on the surface, that is the way it appears. But maybe Nancy Pelosi is the only one that's a chess player in the short game. And maybe the people that are actually behind the Justice Democrats and the hard push to the left are chess players in a longer game, 15, 20 years. Do you think that's a possibility?
Sure. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're a student of history, you know that they're willing to play the long game. I mean, they've been working on their stuff for 120 years now in this country. Certainly since the Wilson administration.
Yeah, right about that time, actually.
Yeah, probably a little bit before that when you had the Keynesian socialism ideas starting to take place here.
You're probably going back to about 1907, 1908, you know, the bank crisis, which gave us the Federal Reserve talk. So, and then that brings in the Wilson administration was the first response to that movement, and then it codifies from there.
Okay. Well, so at least 110 years.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, so we know that, that they think long term, and I don't know. I have to wonder what their goals and objectives are going to be. And, you know, it's a thought exercise. I'm not going to be able to affect this one way or the other, except maybe point this out. And maybe if people start thinking about it in these terms, they'll understand how they think. But anyway, now, you know, flipping back to your xenophobia about people that didn't look like us showing up in an airport with duffel bags. Research Mike Hoare. H-O-A-R-E. He was a British mercenary in Africa. Remember when everything was going on in the Belgian Congo and everything?
Right, yeah.
He took a contract. I think it was Madagascar he was supposed to take over. Michael, he assembled a force of roughly 100 mercenaries, and they flew in via commercial airliner. And they had all their weapons and equipment in duffel bags stowed underneath the plane. Now, somebody at that airport was smart enough to go, hey, what are like 100 white guys with duffel bags doing showing up on the same plane? And that little coup attempt got foiled. So I don't think we can just automatically go to high levels of suspicion being xenophobia or a bad thing. You know, we do kind of live in a world now where we have to think in terms of stuff like what's out of place here.
You know, let me stop you there. Let me stop you there for a second, Clark, because that's an observation that I did not fail to have, but it kind of gives me thought here for just a moment. You and I are roughly the same age. And arguably, many of the people that listen to me over the years, whether it's here or wherever, are roughly of the same age. I know I got some younger listeners. But, you know, your observation causes me to kind of reflect on the fact that there's a lot of young people in this country, you know, they're pro-gender this or whatever, you know, cut your wackadoodle off and become a girl, that kind of stuff. They're so accepting. They're so wide-eyed. Let all the immigrants in. Doesn't matter if you're illegal. They don't harbor the suspicions that their parents do because they didn't experience exactly what we've experienced. It's not dissimilar from our grandparents and great-grandparents that we don't understand still throw quarters into a coffee can because they can remember what it was like to be hungry during the Depression. We have a whole generation of young people today that are drawing what they think are tolerant viewpoints and all accepting viewpoints, like when AOC gets all rankled up about, you know, Trump saying that the immigrants coming to the southern border is an invasion. We can see what he's talking about because we learn to be suspicious of others predicated on the events of that day. And had we been, and in part, had we been more suspicious on that day, 3,000 plus Americans and some of our real estate would still be standing. The young people are so far removed from those events, they don't have an appreciation of, I won't go so far as to say profiling, but I will go so far as to say that be suspicious of everyone. And I don't mean necessarily caustically suspicious, but you know, you got to have eyes in the back of your head and they don't remember the warning signs. They don't, you know, we went for what? We had that stupid Homeland Security rating system that was green and yellow and red and purple, whatever the hell was in it. We weren't green for what, 2-3 years? These kids don't recollect that. They did not recognize the fact that there were people that we should, you know, view with a jaundiced eye. They are functioning or trying to cope with a world they don't understand from the perspective of how there's much evil in the world today. So first off, thanks for the observation. I think you're very astute in it.
Well, unfortunately, we've gotten to the point where Barney Fife is a sage purveyor of wisdom, Michael, because he was smart enough to nip it in the bud. You know, nip it in the bud. If we had paid attention to the American embassy in Beirut in 1979, if we'd have paid attention to the American embassy in Beirut, or I'm sorry, in Iran in 79, Beirut was 83. They call it the barracks. It was an office complex at the airport, October the 23rd of 83, where we lost 241. If we'd have paid attention to the coal, 9/11 never would have happened.
If we had paid attention to the warnings, if we had paid attention to the warnings of the Shah of Iran, 9/11 probably doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, he was an evil man, and you know the Ayatollah Khomeini was a good religious man, Michael, and Jimmy Carter had a good heart. So here we are today.
I hear you. Here we are today.
I don't know. Boy, we've made some bad decisions as a country.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, if you want to know where the wrong side of history was, go look up where the American State Department's position was on a given thing, and you can figure out what was the wrong side. But anyway, I mean, 9/11 was so avoidable. Was it Sudan that offered us Osama bin Laden? And Bill Clinton wouldn't take him?
Yeah, I believe it was. And on a silver platter at that.
Here, come get him. Ooh, we don't want him. Be a mess. Don't know how to handle it. Anyway. Well, Michael, it's about time for you to talk to Miss Megan Barth, and I want to listen to that. So I'm going to let you tidy up whatever you got to do and then get on with her.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the call and the insight.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
I just want to make this one observation for the younger listeners of this program. September 11, 2001, 3,000 Americans, and I realize a lot of them were not of American descent, but they were Americans, the majority of them anyway. The Pentagon, the towers, Pennsylvania. We seem to focus on that number exclusively. But in your naivete, perhaps you fail to realize that every American that has perished in the Middle East since that day, Afghanistan, Iraq, etc., is a byproduct of that date. The fights we have in the Middle East today is a byproduct of September 11, 2001. The rise of the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS. I'm not going to get into whether or not it's a religious war, because for the purposes of making this point, it doesn't matter. You can make the argument that we're over there to keep them from coming over here. But the casualty list is not restricted to 3,000 people. It's restricted to all those that have given their lives in this struggle for the past almost two decades. You do understand this, right? Please tell me you understand this. It is very difficult for a physical army to fight evil. I'm not talking about the evil contained in men's heads. I'm talking about the philosophical evil of an ideology. But yet we have Congress people that don't attend memorial events. Others that speak about their civil rights being restricted on the heels of this event. You got the New York Times here that actually had to delete a tweet after a backlash saying airplanes took aim and brought down the World Trade Center, which, by the way, is the exact same argument that people don't kill, guns kill. So let's just take the word airplanes took aim and brought down the World Trade Center to guns took aim and brought down El Paso. Because that's the asinine bull crap that the left-leaning media puts out. Kristen Cavallari's 9/11 tribute. Not even familiar with who this girl is. Apparently, she's a former Laguna Beach cast member taking selfies to promote her brand of thongs and crotchless panties or whatever the hell it is she sells on the streets of New York. This intellectual slut needs to go entirely away. And if it sounds like some of the older Americans that are in your universe are pissed off, we are. Not just at the events, but at your unbelievable lack of understanding and sensitivity to the day. So many of the things that you endure in your life today are a byproduct of that date. The hyper-surveillance, the TSA, the Homeland Security, checkpoints at the borders, and you're lost to that, completely lost to it. Many of the decisions that this administration and previous administrations have made have been made predicated on preventing, as Clark pointed out, this type of an event occurring again. This is one of the reasons particularly conservatives got so twisted in the wind about Benghazi. And Democrats blew it off because it was a national security failure. And we've had one after the other, after the other, after the other because of some of our most feckless foreign policy positions. Stop with the handouts. Stop with the student loan BS. Stop with the concentration internment camps and abortions for all bullshit. Grow up, put on your big boy and big girl panties, and understand that for the last two decades, this nation has struggled internationally with one of the biggest challenges any nation ever has, and also coming to the rescue of not only just our allies, in some cases, even our enemies. But you concern yourself with crazy, whacked out climate change BS, politics, programs, goodies, student loans, and the ignorance of social media and the very questionable resources for your news. The world you are living in today, the 12th day of September 2019, is not the day your parents were living in on September 10th, 2001. Read a damn book, do your research, grow up, pay attention to your peers, and learn the truth. Or, if you're a Biden fan, the facts or the truth, depending on how you feel about your gender that day. Capiche? Typically, I take a break at this time of the day, running a little bit long. Our good buddy Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com popping in, and we welcome Megan into this edition of the Michael Hart Show. How are you, Megan?
Hey, Michael. Doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm a little worked up from Ilhan Omar and her idiotic BS and Jeb Bush having to slam people at the airport for bitching about the lines, and we got the New York Times deleting tweets, and hell, even Whoopi Goldberg's pissed off at the left. You know, what in the world's up with that? We got Congress people not attending moments of silence. So, yeah, I'm in kind of a hyper-patriotic mood today. I'm looking for a fight. How about you?
I'm good. I'm good. I think you know, yesterday really shows us a lot about how just radical the Democrat Party has become. And I was on another show earlier, and I said, you know, we must never forget, obviously, 9/11, and it's very important for us not to forget to, you know, pass that memory down to future generations, because the left would whitewash it. The left would absolutely ignore it. If you recall, it was Obama who wanted to call 9/11 a day of service instead of a day of remembrance. It was also, many on the left were calling it Patriot Day. It was Obama who could not put Islamic and terrorism in the same sentence. And so I was watching Trump yesterday at a memorial, and he actually called out and said and gave a warning to Islamic terrorists. And I said, oh, how refreshing. I haven't heard that word used by even many in the intel community. If you'll recall, Robert Mueller broke down our whole entire FBI after 9/11 by stripping all references of jihad from the FBI training manuals. So what were we training the FBI on? We certainly weren't training them on identifying and investigating the enemy. Because if you're not fighting something that is identified, then you're not, then you're in a losing battle. And so it's been refreshing to watch this presidency, specifically in its protection of our sovereignty and our security, which is the southern border, as well as identifying the enemy. And, you know, Ilhan Omar actually sent out a tweet yesterday about 9/11. We weren't sure when it was going to come. But she did mention the word terrorism. She did not say Islamic terrorism, but she did mention the word terrorism. But how the left reacted to this crisis and then how they dealt with the crisis is, again, their myopic view of terrorism in general. It was also Obama who said that climate change was a greater threat to our country than terrorism. Well, we lost billions and billions of dollars in 9/11. You know, the heart of New York was not only torn open and torn apart, but the heart of this country was torn open and torn apart by Islamic terrorists. And since 9/11, we now have an Islamic terrorist breeding ground in our country, which is Ilhan Omar's backyard. So who are her constituents? If we have an Islamic terrorist breeding ground in her district, those are her constituents. So this kind of shows you how we must never forget 9/11, but we also must not forget 9/12 and what happened at 9/12 and thereafter, how the country came together, how a sense and a show of nationalism was apparent on every porch and on the side of every building, and from the top of every building, and from the front of every storefront. There were companies that ran out of American flags because we were showing our nationalism. And nationalism, and this is a good example of how the left hijacks words and how they change the definition of a word or how they assign definitions to words that never existed in order to criminalize their opponents, their political dissenters. Nationalism does not mean white supremacy. Nationalism means pride in your country. And what we saw after 9/11 was nationalism.
Right.
We saw a renewed sense of pride in our country, and we displayed that by displaying the American flags, by helping one another, by sacrificing our own time for others, by giving money to others, the victims, etc. That is nationalism, and that's what we have forgotten. And I would like to see not only never forget 9/11, but we must never forget how we reacted as a country and how we came together as a country through a sense of nationalism and pride in order to rebuild.
That's one of the things that I've been talking about a lot today, Megan, is that 9/11, obviously quite a tragic event, but it was the aftermath. How many Americans have died fighting in the Middle East? That was the impetus, that 9/11 was the impetus for that. You know, the older folks out there that remember that day, and I remember it very well, we're reliving it almost every single day in our news cycle, seeing what's going on in the world around us in terms of those that are deployed, how many of us have friends or even, you know, even friends and neighbors that were deployed, you know, in the Middle East in response to this. You know, the TSA, Homeland Security, the Patriot Act, all the things that go on in this country today that these young people do not understand the sacrifices that have been made. And then you have this position in San Francisco where they want to change the word terror to, you know, now all of a sudden the NRA is a terror group. No, Muhammad Atta was a terror group, okay? You know, Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hezbollah, these are terror groups, not the NRA. But they'll sure as hell try to drive that belief, and that's why so many people that are older are so offended by it. Young people can buy into it. Oh, the NRA, they promote guns. They're a terror group. No, the son of a bitches that flew planes into our towers and our Pentagon are terrorists. And I'm pissed off. I am sick and tired of ignorant people. I am sick and tired of people that don't want to hear the truth or learn the truth or think they freaking know something. We got the biggest bunch of dumbasses in this generation that I can recall in recent history because they have not only forgotten, they never knew, Megan. And it pisses me off.
Well, and I think that when you're talking about, you know, the ignorance, you know, they don't really know. The Democrats also are good not only at changing definitions and assigning new words or new definitions to new words, but they also are using inanimate objects in order to create fear. So you have, whether that be climate change, right? We're supposed to fear climate change more than we are supposed to fear terrorism. You know, that is something that Barack Obama said actually at the graduation of the Naval Academy. He was saying, you know, basically your job is to go out and, I guess, punch at windmills. I don't, you know, this climate change thing, instead of fighting terror. And then now we have assault rifles. We have to be afraid of something called assault rifles. You know, it sounds very spooky. But assault rifles don't exist in the market. We can't purchase assault rifles. I don't even know what assault rifles are. If you ask a leftist, what is an assault rifle? They'll say, well, it's a big gun and you can't have it. It looks really dangerous. They don't know what an assault rifle is because it doesn't exist. So that's another. And then, you know, gun control or gun violence. We must fear gun violence. Well, what is gun violence? I've never met an inanimate object that can be violent, but here we are. And so some of this dumbing down is also done by the right, because the right, and I've seen Karl Rove do this, I've seen other pundits on Fox do this, I've seen Ben Shapiro do this, they start using the terms of the right, or excuse me, of the left, in order to have a conservative position. I said, well, how does that work? How can you say, how can you keep repeating the words of the left like assault rifles? Because if you repeat the words of the left, then you give them the power. You're giving them the power to create words, to create definitions. If you use the words gun violence, if you use the words gun control, then you've already ceded your argument. You've already lost it. So we have to get better at putting the left on the defense to define these new words that they create. You know, please tell me what an assault rifle is, Beto. These weapons of war, I keep hearing. Well, if any one of our men or women take in a AR-15 onto the theater in Iraq, they're going to be blown to smithereens in about 2.2 seconds. So they keep using this language in order to incite fear and to take your eyes away from the true enemy. Right, which is radical Islam still to this day and will remain to this day. We've been fighting radical Islamists and Islamic terrorists for generations and dynasties. So, right. You know, we'll see. I think President Trump is really the only one that I haven't heard use the word assault weapon. I might be mistaken. But he even called himself on a stage not too long ago a nationalist. And if you recall the fall, oh my God, he's really gone all white supremacist on us now. Well, no, he's proud to say exactly what he is, and a nationalist is an American.
No, you're actually right. And it's very frustrating. And I have to admit, sometimes my emotions get away from me in discussing it, because so many of these people on the left are so unbelievably just misinformed of what's going on around them. It goes back to, you know, the impeachment stuff and not understanding that impeachment doesn't get you thrown out of office. If I argue with one more Democrat about Bill Clinton being impeached, where they swear he wasn't because they think that impeachment, you know, I've even got some audio here of Nancy Pelosi instructing some people in Congress that impeachment doesn't mean you throw the guy out. Then we got this thing, you know, with, again, Jared Nadler just a little while ago, and another, the House Judiciary Democrats take a step in the Trump impeachment push as they set ground rules for formal committee inquiry. What the hell? What does that mean? All right. They meant to set the ground rules for a formal committee inquiry. So now we're so far afield from the truth and reality of impeachment, we're going to get together a committee to develop an exploratory for a subcommittee that's going to investigate whether or not we can change the rules to introduce the formal implementation of the early stages of impeachment. These people are the biggest bunch of DAs we've seen come down the pike in years.
Right. So imagine if they had complete and total power, how threatened we would all be. I often say, you know, if Hillary Clinton won the election, we would have never known about the vast corruption that exists within our FBI, within our NSA, within our CIA, and all those that were on Team Hillary that were violating numerous constitutional rights and privileges afforded to us. The unmasking of hundreds of individuals simply for working on a political campaign, the targeting of individuals simply being associated with the administration. But this, you know, went back. I was talking on a show yesterday, and they had asked me, you know, when did this divide, you know, we were so unified after 9/11. When did all of a sudden this divide really start taking place? And I said, well, quite frankly, I remember that it kind of really started the weaponization of the federal government against private individuals and citizens, at least in my perspective, started with the Tea Party, because I was involved in that movement. I was an activist, a well-known activist in that movement in Southern California. I had thousands of people show up on midday in April. And thereafter, I had thousands of people show up at a variety of rallies around Southern California in the belly of the beast, the progressive beast. I had thousands and thousands and thousands of people. But the point I'm trying to make is at that time, back in 2009, the Tea Party was labeled a domestic terrorist organization by Janet Napolitano. Nancy Pelosi was calling us brown coats and brown shirts. You had the same inflammatory rhetoric calling us Nazis. So this whole, you know, Nazi stuff that the left now is using against Trump supporters and referring to Trump as Hitler, they're just recycling what they were doing to conservative Tea Partiers in 2008. So the divide is very important. The unity, there is no unity in diversity, meaning that the diversity, the root of diversity means division. And so when you hear the Democrats saying, well, diversity is our strength, diversity is our strength, you hear Nancy Pelosi say that every single chance she gets. Well, that means division is their strength. And that's really what we're fighting against. They don't want unity. If they wanted unity, they would stop calling us Nazis.
Right. Well, you know, it's even like, you know, taking your reference back to the Tea Party movement and how it was deemed to be a terrorist organization. I mean, I wonder how many people, the younger people out there that were not up to speed, you know, Tea was actually an acronym for Taxed Enough Already. I was very involved with the Tea Party movement, you know, here in Alabama. I thought one of the very first events we did, 11,000 people showed up. But this was an economic protest. This was a protest about, well, we paid enough taxes. It had nothing to do with you know, it wasn't until the Democrats weaponized the Tea Party movement that the Tea Party movement became a little more weaponized. Because originally it was just because, you know, in the early days, when that very first event that I went to, I'd say 15, 18, 20% of the people that were there were black. because they too were taxed enough. It wasn't until, you know, I got a friend of mine right here in Alabama. Her name is Becky Gerritsen, and you can actually Google Becky. She was one of the ones, she was in charge of the Wetumpka Tea Party down around Montgomery, our state capital. She was the one that kept getting flown up to Capitol Hill to testify on the IRS and their desire to go after Tea Party groups. But all they were trying to do was protest high taxation. It's the damnedest thing. I mean, Democrats have become so unbelievably militaristic, and then they accuse the right of being militaristic, and it's just, it's mind-blowing to me, Megan. That's one of the reasons I have you on this program with me every week, is to kind of talk me off the ledge, because I can't deal with this level of ignorance.
Well, and then also you've got now that what the totalitarian left is trying to do outside of weaponize, you know, their federal agencies, their power, the House, for example, like you said, with the impeachment parade that is and charade that's going on. It's also red flag laws, right? So you've got these totalitarians, these leftists, these communists, these Marxists, these socialists, very proud socialists, obviously, because they're running as socialists. They're the ones who have been, these are the ones who, the same people who believe that or want you to believe that Trump was an agent of Putin, who have been calling everyday average Americans Nazis, referring to this president as Hitler. These are the mental unstable, these are the mentally unstable lot that all of a sudden want to red flag us. I think they should be red flagged. I was asked on Twitter, I think, the other day, what type of guns and ammo would you like to see banned? And I said, any guns and ammo owned by a Bernie Sanders supporter. Because it was the Bernie Sanders supporter that walked onto a Virginia baseball field with a Republican kill list and was going to take out as many Republicans on that field as he could. And he nearly succeeded by assassinating Steve Scalise. And if it wasn't for the Capitol, if it wasn't for Steve Scalise being there, we would not have had Capitol Police there, which ended up saving the lives of the rest of the Republicans. So, you know, so here you have the totalitarian communist left that have labeled a whole swath, 62 million Americans, as Nazis. They're the ones that are going to be deciding who's red flagged. Yeah, you can come and take it out of my cold, dead hands. And now you've got Republicans. Now you've got Republicans that are even signing on to some of these red flag laws. And that therein lies the problem.
What fascinates me so much in terms of the protections of the truth is that if Putin did get involved in the election to the degree that the Democrats had claimed, he would have much preferred Hillary Clinton. We had already went through the Uranium One thing. We already know that there was a relationship between the Kremlin and the Department of Justice. We know that Hillary Clinton was a Secretary of State. She was feckless and very malleable. And very, you know, we had Barack Obama talking to Medvedev on that hot mic that he can't do nothing until he gets reelected. The Kremlin has always, at least in recent years, preferred the Democrat Party. The only time they were really in opposition to the Democrats, you got to go all the way back to Kennedy and Khrushchev. After that period of time, they love them some Dems. And the lefter they go, the more they love them. And so the whole idea of Trump and the Kremlin is ignorant on every single level. But speaking of ignorance, I want you to comment on this because we are getting a little tight on time here. But talking about impeachment and Jared Nadler's comment, he, in a hearing yesterday, uses the terminology, the resolution before us represents the necessary next step in our investigation of corruption, obstruction, and abuse of power. I don't even know what that means. And it's the same thing. They never define corruption or obstruction or abuse of power. And being head of the judiciary in the House of Representatives, his next step is to introduce articles of impeachment. So why are we creating a committee to discuss the resolution of the next level of committee investigations as to the veracity of corruption, obstruction of power, and abuse of power to implement articles of impeachment? Do you see what I'm talking about? They're in a pool of political water, and they're treading water. They're going nowhere. And all across the country, you got these dumbass Democrats nodding their head going, yep, you go, Jerry. You go get him. and yet he's doing absolutely nothing. And they're feeding him this constant word diet that means absolutely nothing. And yet you have this wide swath of Democrats out there think we're making some kind of political progress on the left. It befuddles the mind.
Well, the ends justify the means. So it doesn't necessarily matter how many laws are broken or how many laws they want to create or how many rules they want to change or how many laws they want to ignore. It's the ends that justify the means. So this is political theater 101. And what we are witnessing, what Jerry Nadler is doing is, you know, feeding the beast. It's feeding the base. It's feeding the, you know, maybe 20 to 30% of the population that believes and that have been convinced to believe through propaganda funneled by the mainstream media. That's why the media, you know, we have to realize that the media is so incredibly powerful. As we are witnessing how Google is so incredibly powerful, and I lump in tech with the media because actually they have entered into the foray of the media, whereby what they are producing as far as search results, algorithms, algorithm manipulation, what they are producing is propaganda in order to manipulate perceptions and also what? Interfere in the elections. So if you watch last Sunday, Mark Levin, you saw Dr. Joseph Epstein, who's a behavioral scientist out of Canada and also a Clinton supporter, come forward and say that Google could have shifted as many as 72 million votes in the 2018 election simply based on search results and the saturation of information that they were providing in certain key areas, districts, et cetera. That I just Googled yesterday, for example, what was I Googling? Oh, I was trying to find the Supreme Court decision related to the Central American asylum seekers. Huge win for us yesterday. And I got on the first three search pages, I never found Fox News. I found Vox, BuzzFeed News. I found, of course, MSNBC and all New York Times, The Atlantic, all of these left-wing periodicals or information sources. I didn't even go to page 4 because I just went to Fox News, right? I just typed in Fox News and went there because I'm like, I'm not going any deeper into this rabbit hole. God knows what Al Jazeera. I got Al Jazeera. So, you know, this shows you the power and how much power the media has and technology has in order to produce the stupidity that you speak of. Because some people aren't going to go to the fourth search page. I'm not going to the fourth search page. And I consider myself pretty well read. But there comes a point in time you're like, oh, screw it. I'm just going to go to Fox News. But I do that every once in a while to see what I get, right? Like a little test.
Yeah. I do it too. And it's so unbelievably frustrating. And it's not just a matter of getting the truth out there. It's the people out there that I feel like have become victims. They're completely victimized and they don't even realize it. And I guess, you know, in this Instagram world that we live in where, you know, how wide my ass is and how well my thong fits, you know, I guess that's at the end of the day, the world that people want to live in. And bless their hearts, I guess they can have it because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just going to, you know, take it to the lake, take it to the boat, and go watch my Auburn Tigers play and leave people with their own ignorance to wallow in their own despair. Because you know something? You must have to be really, really, really pissed off and angry to be a Democrat. You know, I mean, ignorance actually hurts. I mean, it creates headaches. You know, I mean, how do Democrats sleep at night worrying about kids in cages, the looming climate change, the fact that somebody's going to walk into the school or the mall or even my home and shoot me up? I mean, how do you exist? How do you get through your day believing what they believe, Megan? I mean, it must be absolutely despairing for them.
Yeah, I don't try to figure out insanity. I just usually try to defeat it or run away from it, you know, and ignore it.
Yeah.
Because there is a sense of, well, there was a reporter, I guess, if you want to call them reporters, which is another word that's used way too loosely. that said she had suffered from insomnia after Trump won. And then, of course, you have others that said that they were suffering from depression. They're suffering from anxiety. You know, when Obama won the second term, I cried a little bit because I knew Obamacare was going to be cemented and it was going to be here. It was going to be the law of the land. And that was my motivating factor of getting off the couch was Obamacare in my political activism. But nonetheless, you know, I got a little sad, right? But I bounced back, you know, I became an activist, and I carved my own path and took the opportunity to speak out, even though I was being targeted. And I didn't start getting politically targeted until I started getting politically active. And then I was targeted by the left. And so the left now is, they can't cope because they've been fed a diet of garbage.
Right.
They have been fed a diet that says that climate change, like I said, is more dangerous than terrorism. Well, when you're afraid of the weather, my God, don't come out of the house. Please don't vote, crying out loud.
I'm sorry. I can only imagine. Oh, dear God, the sun's out. It's partly cloudy. Oh, my God, that's hysterical when you're afraid of the weather. I hadn't even really thought about it that way. Megan.
Yeah.
On that note, you can't possibly do any better. Tell the listeners how they can find out more about it. And to sign up your newsletter, too.
I may have lost you there.
No, I'm right here. Yeah, I'm right here. I just want you to tell people how they can learn more about you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It's at ReaganBabe.com. Reagan as in Ronald, Babe as in Ruth. ReaganBabe.com. I have a daily news feed. I update it nearly every morning, but usually by the mid-afternoon, you'll find all of the stuff that we've been talking about and that I talk about daily. You can sign up for my newsletter, which you'll get every Saturday morning. You can read it over your coffee. Many people do. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter at ReaganBabe.
Thank you, my dear. I have enjoyed this speed date like I always do. You always bring it. And I'm going to have to go out and get into this fearful weather today that we have, which, by the way, you know, here in Alabama, we're still running heat indexes of 98 to 100 degrees in September. So, yeah, I guess we do have some weather to fear. But I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take it on, Megan. Thanks to you,
there you
for invigorating me.
Fight to live another day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Megan, we'll talk next week.
Sounds very good. Thanks, Michael.
All right. We'll talk to you then. All right, guys. Let's wrap this puppy up. Go check out Fear the Weather. Oh, my gosh. Go check out heartofamerica.net. Share the program with somebody. Do us a solid, would you? Support the program on the Patreon feed if you are so compelled to do so. Every little bit helps. We'd love to grow this thing some more. I'm still working on the YouTube stuff. I'm trying to get the 1619 thing all squared away because I'm taking some heat on some of the comments that I made in a recent interview, and I'm going to really nail people to the wall, so to speak, on some of the idiocracy they put out there. So I'll have the 1619 expose put together. It's only going to run about 15, 20 minutes. That's the problem I'm having. Is there's so much evidence, there's so much information on some of the things I want to talk about that take me longer than 15, 20 minutes to explore, and I'm trying to pare it down as much as I possibly can so that people will listen to the duration, because context is everything, and if you don't listen to the entire explanation, then sometimes it just simply will not make sense. But with that said, go over to the YouTube channel, Heart, H-A-R-T, Heart of America. Subscribe to the channel. We don't got nothing to sell you. It's just a great way to learn and keep up with the program. And also, if you would like to support the program and advertise on the show, you can reach me at Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Michael at heartofamerica.net. If you know any organizations, churches, groups, civic groups, colleges, the high schools even, that would love to have us come out. You know, we don't charge locally, but we do charge regionally. But if you'd like to get the word out there about the way the media is screwing people over, if you're a Republican club in the Deep South, even a Democrat for that matter, and you'd like to learn the history of this country, the true history of this country, and really get into it. And it's the book is funny in places. It's entertaining. It's provocative. What's covered in the book Under in America is the same stuff we cover in our public presentations. Drop me an email again, Michael. @heartofamerica.net. That's Michael @heartofamerica.net. Please share the program. Please support us financially any way you can. Please spread the news about the speaking events and what we have to offer out there, because really and truly, folks, there really is a war on for your mind. I hate to steal Alex Jones's tagline, but it absolutely is the truth. we're coming into probably one of the most important and decisive elections in American history, at least this century. You know, the folks back in 1860 might disagree with that, but then again, we're going to have to show them something in 2020. Please help support the message and get it out there. Entertain and inform these young people of what they're missing. And let's never forget. Let's never forget not only the events of 9/11/2001, but the way we felt on 9/12/2001 and how that right has been stolen by those that see the fear in us being unified as a body of Americans first and liberals and conservatives and Democrats and Republicans second. You've been listening to The Michael Hart Show. We're actually going to be out of here until next week, trying to get some book stuff squared away, so no program tomorrow. But we will be back with you live next week. For all the scheduling, go to Hart, H-A-R-T, heartofamerica.net, and we will talk to you guys then. Hope you have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful weekend. And you've been listening to The Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network.